Okay, so that's 1969, and the follow-up album is...
The following was Crow by Crow.
Okay, and that, what year did this come out?
And that came out in 70, I believe.
Okay.
It's been about the summer of 70. We did that one in L.A. That was the first album we did in L.A.
That was TTG Studios in Hollywood?
Yeah.
What was it like being in Los Angeles compared to Minneapolis or Chicago?
Great. It was a great experience, you know. I mean, completely different way of doing things, and I enjoyed it a lot. The first album was a kind of went between a couple of studios. I mean, Chicago, and we did it in parts of it in, up in Michigan in a studio up there. So the second album we did out there, and we had some really, really good people and access to some good people and stuff. So I enjoyed it a lot out there. Then Mosaic, we did some of that. Out there in Minneapolis.
When you're in Los Angeles, are you making the scene at the Whiskey A Go Go and Gazzari's?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we work both of those places, you know, but also when you're hanging out there, well, I mean, that was places to go back then, mm-hmm. You know.
Culture shock for a band from Minnesota?
Not really. By the time that we had got By the time we got to the second album and got out there, we'd pretty much seen it all, you know. So it wasn't really any kind of a culture shock or anything like that. We fit right in with it.
So Crow by Crow has your second hit 45, Cottage Cheese.
Right.
Strange name for a song. Who came up with that name?
I did. The song wasn't written to have any vocals. It was written as an instrumental
by Larry and Dick.
Danny Craswell and the guys in the band. It was meant to be an instrumental to lead into a drum solo. That's all it was for. And back then we were rehearsing in Minneapolis out at the place called The Prison. That's where we did all of our rehearsal, because we could use the big stage and just blast away. And so we spent hours out there. And I was sitting over in a corner, and they're working on this thing, and I thought, well, you know, I could just stick a few lyrics in here and there and, you know, just do something with it while they were working on it. So I just jotted down a few things and went up there, and it basically was a jam session, you know, and I came up with what I came up with, and that led into the drum solo. When we went to L.A. then, when we went to record it, because they liked the song, and they said, but we don't want the drum solo. The drum solo is going to take up way too much room. We don't want the drum solo on the album, but we want the song. So we recorded it. We cut it down and recorded the thing, and then they came out, and they said, well, what's the name of it? And I went, I have no idea. You know, well, you got to have some kind of a name. And don't ask me why, cottage cheese, just that's the first thing that popped in my head. Producer goes, okay, cottage cheese it is. And that's, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. I was probably, we won't go into that.
Did you think it was a hit song?
No.
But it was.
It did good. Actually, it came out, that was a B-side. Slow Down was the A-side.
Oh, the cover song of... the old R&B song.
Yeah, the old R&B song, which the Beatles did, and then we did our version of it. And, Larry Williams originally did it. That was the A side.
Okay.
And Cottage Cheese was the B side. What happened was, is halfway up with Slow Down started going up on the charts, but then disc jockey radio stations all of a sudden started flipping it over. And they were, so Cottage Cheese was getting as much airplay as Slow Down was, and then it was getting more airplay. So it was just one of those things. It kind of went up the charts by accident, you know.
So was it re-released as the A-side then?
No, I don't believe it was. I think it was just the one, you know, it was just they were both on the same copy.
Does it do as well as Evil Woman?
No. I don't remember what number it went to. The album did a lot better. The album itself did a lot better than the first album, but single off of the album, no, did not do as good as Evil Woman.
Okay. So you're still playing large concerts throughout the country?
Oh, yeah.
On the road a lot?
All the time. Pretty much, yeah.
What was a typical day like in the life of Crow?
You know, depending on whether you're going to rehearse that day or not. But when you're on the road, most of the time we didn't, other than maybe get together in a room 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon or something. But it was pretty much sleep till 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then get up and start trying to wake up, maybe have a little bite to eat, and then you were going until 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning again. You know, everything's turned around.
Okay, what happens next with Crow?
Mosaic, yeah. Mosaic was the third album.
All right, and this is recorded where now?
And that one was kind of, some of the stuff was done in L.A., some of it was done here in Minneapolis. We were kind of getting into the mode where instead of being on the road all the time, we had our own plane. We were leasing a plane and flying to the gig, so we weren't out there having to travel. You know, we'd leave that morning for a gig rather than leaving 3 days before it. So we were spending more time in the studio here and doing most of our rehearsing and everything. Mosaic, we had a couple of them on there. That I think the King of Rock and Roll was the one that got put out as a single on it.
How'd that 45 do?
Did not do that well. We didn't get the record label pushing the way they should have. We also had a deal. Jeff Thomas is the guy that wrote it. We didn't write that one. And we were told that we had exclusive rights. If we recorded it, we had exclusive rights. Nobody else could do it. And so we released it as a single. And about 2 months later, along came Long John Baldry. We're here on the radio, and here's this version of the same thing we've got, done completely different. But it's the same song. Rod Stewart had produced that and stuff. They had them behind him, and they got a bigger shove than we did, so it kind of squashed ours out. And so that was kind of then at that point after Mosaic is where things that then they did the best of. They did a best of.
Mosaic was 1971.
Is that
correct?
Yeah. And then the next album was just a best of Crow, which they came out with. And we, at that point, we were having troubles with management and record label and all sorts of stuff. I just kind of said, you know, I think it's time to move on. And I left.
All these albums are produced by Bob Monaco.
Right.
From Dunwich Productions.
Yep, they were.
So the band had a contract with Dunwich and Amaret?
Dunwich was doing all of that stuff, and we had the contract with Amaret, and Amaret wouldn't let us out of the contract. Elektra wanted us, but they wanted us with the name Crow. Amaret said, nope. He says, you can go with them, but he says, you can't have the name. You can't leave with that name. I got you under contract. And so we're pretty much at a standstill, which is why I did the solo album.
What was the solo album later called?
DBA Crow, Doing Business As, Dave Wagner. And that just, because I left the band, then I was just really disgusted with the whole business end of music and kind of went and hibernated for a while. And they called me up and said, well, we want you to do a solo album. And they said, we're going to send you some songs and you pick out what you want to do. They sent me a bunch of songs and I went through them and stuff. And they flew me out there, had great, great musicians on it and stuff. And
these are all studio musicians?
Yep, all studio musicians and stuff and some really good people. And
Jim Gordon on drums.
Jim Gordon was on drums.
Joe Osborne on bass.
Yep. Yeah, there was some
top
really good
Hollywood
people.
Musicians.
Oh yeah, yeah, and you know, the album did very well. But what happened was is that it was Amaret was bought out by MGM, and basically it was one of these things where Amaret said, "Well, look, we'll sell you this, but I want to do an album, you know, with Dave and stuff." And they just sufficed him by, there was no push, no promotion behind the album or anything. Once it was done, it was just, okay, we, mm-hmm. you know, we did what we said we were going to do. We released the album and now we're done with you. So
your experience with Amaret was not a good one.
Not the best, no.
And that seems to be the case with so many bands, that there's issues on the business end with the production company, the record company.
Yeah, and back then it was actually, because Atlantic Records wanted the band originally. But Dunwich Productions, who we got wound up with, they came up with this, well, if you go with Atlantic, you know, that's a big label and they're going to squash you and this and that. And you're not going to get the promotion you want. And so they're the ones that picked Amaret. Well, later on, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the only reason that they didn't want us to go to Atlantic is because they thought that they were going to lose a foothold in the money, you know, in the whole thing. And our manager was, you know, he was taking us and yeah, they were taking us and, you know, and all we are is a bunch of young musicians, don't know anything about the music business whatsoever. And so they're just taking us for a ride. And by the time you figure it all out, it's too late. So nowadays they're smart. The young musicians now go to business school and they know what's going on. A lot of them do anyways. And they pay a lot more attention in things that happened to the groups back in the 50s and the 60s and stuff. Doesn't happen so much anymore.
So in the back of your mind to this day, is there a what if we had signed with Atlantic Records?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would have been a completely different story.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Gypsy play live in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we did, because we knew Gypsy. They worked once when we were out there, they were working Whiskey Go Go. Mm-hmm. And so we went up and, you know, we went out and seen them, and then we all went up to their place because we all knew each other from back here. So. Mm-hmm.
So Crow comes to an end roughly in what year?
72. Mm-hmm. Early 72.
There's two rather famous cover versions of Evil Woman.
Mm-hmm.
One by Ozzy Osbourne.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's a live version.
No, he's got a studio version of it. He had a studio. It was on their first, it wasn't released here. It was on their first European album.
Was
it
that
was only released in Europe.
Was that as Black Sabbath?
Right. I think, okay. Yeah. It's as Black Sabbath because I've got a copy of it at home.
Okay. What did you think of that cover version?
Well, it was okay other than he messed up half the lyrics, but he didn't have some lyrics straight on it, but it was all right. Mm-hmm. I can't say it was better.
And the other cover version, which I have not heard, but I've heard about, is by Tina Turner.
Tina Turner. But that was back when it was the Ike and Tina Turner review.
Was it Evil Woman or was it Evil Man?
Evil Man. She did it as Evil Man. And they pretty much did it exactly like we did, as far as it was a little faster. But otherwise, it was pretty much close to the same way that we originally did it, with the, you know, with the horns and the whole deal.
Since you guys were the songwriters, did you get any royalties from those versions?
No. No, most of that went to the people that took us for it, you know, management, record producers,
companies.
Publishing companies, all went that way.
Do you still have the rights to those songs to this day, or are they?
Well, no. To Evil, we do to some, because we got smart later on.
What about Evil Woman?
Started our own publishing company.
So Evil Woman and cottage cheese.
Evil Woman, I don't have any.
Okay. And cottage cheese.
It was re-recorded by somebody else here, not whatever, and they did. I got a little bit of money off of that one, but.
How recently?
Recently, 10 years ago or something. Okay. I don't even know the name of the band or anything. I never heard it on the radio. I don't know what happened. And it was out on, I found it on copies of where they'll have two bands on 145, stuff like that. I found it on the B-side, it'd be on one side and some other band would be on the other, whatever. All kinds of things like that. No, I never got anything off of that stuff.
So after Curl and after your solo album, what do you go on to do in the music business?
After that, I moved up north and kind of banged around for a little bit with a couple small groups, and then I got with a group called Whiskey River later in the 80s and did about 5 years with them, mostly road work, country rock stuff. And then went back and had a couple of different versions of Crow, and in fact, I'm still going out and doing Crow gigs now.
Who's in the current version of Crow?
Current version, Larry Wiegand, the original bass player, and Norm Steffen, drummer, has been with me for, him and I are together ever since Whiskey River. So 25 years or so we've been playing together. Jeff Christensen is in there, which was in another version of Crow back about 20 years ago. And then Mike Nato, guy from Rochester, mm-hmm. Minnesota, on keyboards. And that's it. But like I say, I've had so many different versions of... My daughter was singing with me for a while here a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I've had lots of different people come and go.
Still fun for you to perform, to sing?
Yeah, I still like to get out and do it. I don't like to do as much of it, I wouldn't want to go back to doing 3 hours a night or 4 hours a night or that kind of stuff. That just wouldn't work for me at all. But I go out and do an hour and a half set. That's fine. I'm good with that.
Do you have a favorite Crow song?
No, I really don't. I mean, I think every once in a while when I put things together, I find a couple of new songs, and those probably are my favorite at that time, just because they're new and different, and see what we can do with those. Evil Woman, I guess, would be the other next shot, just for the fact that Evil Woman was the one that kind of put us over the hump with stuff, But I can't say that it's my favorite. It's really hard to pick a favorite, Mm-hmm. They're all kind of your favorite in a certain way.
Do you still write?
No. I haven't written for a long time. Just brain don't work towards writing no more.
Anything you would like to add about your career or in music?
No, not really, other than it's been good, it's been good. It's had ups and it's had downs and everything else, and certainly there's some stuff that I would do, if I could do it over again, would do differently. But on the other hand, it's all been part of the process too. You can't look at, what if or anything like that. It's just been all part of the process, and I enjoy the music and I enjoy the people. So it's been good. I really don't have any complaints.
So I know you're up here for the summer playing some gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Do people come up to you with old Crow albums and ask for autographs?
Yeah, I still get that. Still all sorts of old things they come up with, and old posters and what have you, and stuff. So it's fun, Some of them I wonder where they got that stuff from, but...
Dave, thank you for taking the time to share your memories with us today.
Well, thank you for taking the time to have me share my memories with you.
The preceding interview was recorded at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota on July 21st, 2010, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell.
every day. Kiss right, hold tight, got a lot of things to say. Never before in my life have I seen. Can I believe what I found? It's like a dream. You make me feel so damn proud. I wanna cry here out loud. Never before in my life have I seen. So much love in every single night. Great face, my place. Hold until the morning light.